Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, offering new and used vehicles to help Mainers explore the beauty of their home state. Learn more at leeauto.com.
This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz with Maine Public's Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler and Senior Political Correspondent Mal Leary. Maine's 2nd Congressional District is getting a lot of big-name attention this campaign. Now, it's true that Democratic incumbent Jared Golden is mounting his first defense of his House seat, often a time when House incumbents are most vulnerable. But Steve Missler, this is not all about flipping one House seat back to the Republicans, is it?
It's not, Erwin. The 2nd District could play an outsized role in determining the presidential election. And that seems hard to fathom given our paltry number of electoral votes. There's only 4 statewide. But, you know, the reason why it could factor in is that Maine is one of just 2 states that award electoral votes by congressional district rather than giving them all to the statewide winner. The other state is Nebraska. In Maine, this phenomenon has happened exactly once, and it was just 4 years ago when President Donald Trump took the 2nd District despite losing the state statewide, and he received 1 electoral vote for his efforts here. Now, he didn't need it then, but he might need it this year. That's why he visited Bangor and Guilford in early June, making appeals to a lobster industry hobbled by his trade war and trashing Governor Janet Mills over her pandemic response as he attempted to reframe his own as a success. His son Eric Trump was here last week to again woo the lobster industry. And this week, Trump's eldest son, Donald Trump Jr., held events in Holden and Bangor. The events by the Trump sons almost certainly foreshadow another visit from the president, who made nearly a half dozen campaign stops in Maine in 2016, which I think at the time was looked at as a little bit perplexing by people. But I think back then they had a sense that if the race is close, that they may need that electoral vote. And that may very well be the case this year. You know, polls show that Biden, you know, has a very slim lead, or it's actually a statistical dead heat in this new poll from Colby College, which we'll discuss later. And it also appears that, you know, because of that, Biden himself will pay more attention to the state than Hillary Clinton did in 2016 when, I mean, the extent of her efforts here were to dispatch surrogates, namely Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who came here twice basically to fire up activists and attempt to sand over the bitter primary battle at that time. Today, as we're recording this, you know, Jill Biden, the vice president's wife, is expected to campaign in Blue Hill. Now, that seems like a lot of attention for Maine, but again, there's a lot of scenarios out there where this electoral vote in the 2nd District could play a factor. Again, you know, again, the polls are very close. It's hard to say, you know, who's going to win here. We'll have to just see how it all shakes out. You know, one thing I would say is that the president's victory here prompted national pundits to declare the 2nd District deeply conservative, but that's never really been the case. It's not its past, and I would argue it's not its present. Democratic presidential candidates have fared well here, including President Barack Obama. I think if you could define the 2nd District, it's that with the exception of 3 presidential contests, it always seems to pick the winner. And so in that sense, it's become a bit of a bellwether nationally. And that's partially why I think you're seeing reporters from national news outlets coming here. I saw one story in the Los Angeles Times this week and a second one in the Washington Post. And I think we're going to see a few more as the campaign rolls on.
So what does that say about Jared Golden's attempts to hold that seat up in the 2nd District?
Jared Golden's in good shape, right, Mal? I mean, you have the Colby poll sitting in front of you, but it sounds like he's doing quite well.
56-33 over challenger D.L. Crafts. That's up considerably from the first Colby poll. And if you look at the numbers, it's going to be extremely difficult for D.L. Crafts, no matter how closely he tries to tie himself to President Trump, which he is trying to do, to make up that kind of deficit. I think it goes to the fact that you've got this tremendously well-produced and executed television campaign by Jared Golden. It talks about issues, it talks about where he stands, and it also has some humor in it, a couple of different ads. And meanwhile, D.L. Crafts is still trying to introduce himself as to who he is, because outside of the Androscoggin County area, he's just not very well known. So that I think that shows why you have such this this 21-point lead is pretty dramatic.
Yeah, it's really interesting, too, because, I mean, let's not forget that race was rated as a toss-up, you know, at the beginning of the year, and it kind of has stuck there until these public polls have come out. It's pretty amazing. And the other thing, too, about just real quick, I'll mention Mal brought up the ad campaigns. One thing I would know about Golden's ads is that they're positive. He has yet to be negative against Dale Crafts. And I think if you look at all the ads that are out there right now, that might seem like a nice respite for voters who are just getting, you know, bombarded with negative ads, especially in the Senate race, which is just, you know, it's just brutal right now. Yeah.
And before we leave that second district race, Steve, your newsletter also reports the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has pulled back on its advertising on behalf of Golden, which I guess is going to be a measure of confidence on their part.
That's exactly right. I mean, the Colby poll is reinforcing what I think is probably a decision by the DCCC, as it's often referred to, at least in political circles. That's why they're pulling out. They see a candidate who's relatively safe, at least at the moment, and they're going to reinvest their resources that they had slotted here for other races, either to play defense and protect other seats in other parts of the country, or to go on offense. A lot of Democratic groups are going back from a defensive crouch and a lot of tight races like this one, or at least this one was supposed to be, and they're going on offense in races that they didn't expect to pick up. That's pretty amazing because the DCCC, they spent over $1.5 million here just 2 years ago trying to bolster Golden. And Mal also just referenced this, but I'll just bring it up again. I think, you know, things could certainly change, especially if the president does come here to campaign. You know, because what he would do is presumably is have Dale Crafts up on the stage with him and try to promote him as a candidate. And the hope is that Crafts can somehow draft off the energy of the president. The president has had sort of produced a mixed bag of results when it comes to endorsing candidates and holding them up before a crowd. And I think that, you know, I think that a lot of that has to do with the type of person the president is and how, like, where his support comes from. I think a lot of people are drawn to him because of his own personality and charisma, and it's hard to transfer that down to other candidates who may not possess those qualities. So
I can also hear the president, though, using Jared Golden as a part of his case against ranked choice voting and other Democratic changes to voting procedures.
Absolutely.
Maine is a step closer to being the first state to use ranked choice voting in a presidential election. But Mal, the Maine Republican Party still has not given up its efforts to stop that from happening.
No, they have not. The state Supreme Court unanimously ruled that the petitions had to be circulated by people who were registered to vote already in their community. Republicans went to court, to the state Supreme Court, that a case out in Colorado should prevail, where the U.S. Supreme Court had said they were disenfranchising people who were not enrolled in a party who should be able to circulate those petitions if they wanted to. Now, that is what the Republican case is being hung on, is that Colorado case. It's really, though, as one expert lawyer in this area told me, a Hail Mary. The United States Supreme Court does not have to take up this appeal, no more than any other appeal that comes to them. They have to grant what's called certiorari, which means they will listen to the case. But the interim is what gets interesting, and where we're looking at political maneuvering across the country by the Trump campaign, because no doubt about it, the money for this is being funneled through from the Trump campaign. The state Supreme Court has now been asked to stay their decision. Now you go, well, what's so important about them staying their decision? Well, this was a people's veto. So if they stay this, the people's veto goes forward, which means under the state constitution, there will not be the implementation of ranked choice voting until the voters decide whether it should apply to presidential contests. So we're seeing an attempt to use the courts to block what normally would be done through the petition process followed by a referendum vote.
Well, we now know Republicans are likely to confirm President Trump's choice for the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court. And that's despite Maine Senator Susan Collins' opposition to that and her vow to vote against the nominee if the vote is held before Election Day. So where does this leave Collins and her reelection bid?
It helps to the extent that the Colby poll is showing that overwhelmingly, nearly 60% of Maine voters were saying they should wait until after the election to move forward on a Supreme Court nomination. So I think she's got some cover there in that her position roughly follows that position of what voters want to see in the Colby poll. So I think once again, we're seeing Susan Collins being able to thread the needle, the political needle here on a very thorny issue.
You know, the race has already been defined in a lot of ways by judicial appointments, specifically Collins's vote for Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. And I think that's why Collins is in trouble with her traditional coalition, which is made up of Democrats and center-left voters, as well as Republicans, of course. For the left, I think the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg has essentially reanimated their disenchantment and anger at Collins, which I'd argue has been at a slow boil for the past 2 years for various reasons. But as voters contemplate a 6-3 conservative majority on the court, the threat liberals and center-left feel is more real and less abstract than the confirmation of just one judge. And I also think it makes it harder for Collins, potentially, despite the fact that she seems to be on the right side of public opinion in terms of when the vote should take place. I think it makes it a little bit harder at the end of the day to win back those voters to the extent that they could be in the first place. But I also don't really want to underplay the danger Collins faces on the right. A lot of Republican voters are very supportive of the president, and they want Republican senators like Collins to do what he wants. I mean, that pressure was on display all this week as Trump world surrogates pummeled Collins on Fox News and other conservative media outlets. And the president himself also weighed in, saying Collins was basically inviting the wrath of Maine voters by not voting for his pick if that vote comes before Election Day. It just illustrates, again, the real pickle that she's in, not just from the left or the center left, but also on the right.
And we also have to remember that in 1996, she won election that first time out by getting suburban women to support her. The Colby poll has consistently been showing she's lost that constituency. Those people are voting against her now. And this latest poll continues that same trend. Even though there's an agreement there that they shouldn't move forward on this nomination, I don't think it's affecting that particularly crucial group of voters to Senator Collins. The big question, of course, is always where she does the worst is among young women voters. And that is one group that we just have never been able to get a decent handle on how many are going to turn out. I would point out, for example, exit polls show that in 2016, 11% of the electorate was in that youngest age group. But that dropped down to 7% in 2018. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, except when you apply it to the hundreds of thousands of voters. You know, you could have clearly have someone win or lose just on that kind of a shift.
Yeah, that's interesting too, Mal, for a couple of reasons, because I do wonder if the timing of this whole court battle, you know, gives those younger voters impetus to turn out when they otherwise wouldn't have. Going back to the point I was trying to make before, which is that with the prospect of a 6-3 conservative majority sitting there, I do wonder if that's going to, you know, motivate younger voters to turn out when they may not have otherwise. You know, they may have been under the impression that a narrow conservative majority wasn't as much of a threat as a 6-3 conservative majority.
With some of the protests involving police and those activities, I think that also is tending to focus younger people on the court system writ large, and that may also be making a difference.
And we can't lose sight of the fact that we're not looking at the 2016 to 2018 landscape. We're looking at a very different landscape with the pandemic that's underway. Many of these colleges where you could count on a big vote coming out because the students were on campus and they enrolled and they voted is not going to happen this year. And the question becomes, will they indeed vote here in Maine for those students from out of state? And will Maine students take the time to vote, given the extra time it's taking for them to get their normal life going in school with all of this remote learning as opposed to the normal academic environment.
Maine Public's Mal Urey and Steve Missler. As you heard me mention earlier, Steve is now preparing a weekly Political Pulse newsletter, which posts to mainepublic.org, normally on Friday afternoons. Our Political Pulse podcast is also updated Fridays. You can download it from mainepublic.org or wherever you usually go hunting for podcasts. Most of it is broadcast on Weekend Edition Sunday on Maine Public Radio. And we also air an excerpt of The Pulse on Monday's Morning Edition. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Willis Ryder Arnold. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. We'll be back with you soon.